moving on forward, we've got our. All right, thank you both for being here. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Fiskett in case number 2327. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 322234. Dr. Fiskett, please come forward and introduce yourself.
My name is Roseanne Fiskett.
Okay. And David Stoltz here, his legal counsel for Dr. Fiskett.
Great. Dr. Fiskett, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
We have no additional materials. The only additional materials we submitted since this was moved to an informal was a video clip. And yesterday we submitted a supplemental statement from the technician, Ms. Thomas.
Okay. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that the only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Let's see, Dr. James, can you please give us a summary of this case?
Yes, this is case 2327. On September 5th, 2022, Rocky, an 11-year-old male Maltese, was presented to the respondent for an anesthesia-free dental cleaning. The dog was examined and deemed healthy for the procedure. During the dental cleaning, the dog collapsed and died. CPR was unsuccessful. The dog was taken to VetMed where CPR was continued. The dog passed away. The dog had a history of a heart murmur and cough. Due to jugular distension and fluid coming from the dog's lungs, congestive heart failure or ruptured tendine chordae was suspected for the unexpected death.
Okay, Dr. Fiskett, at this time I would like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Dr. Fiskett, we would now like to give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
Thank you for giving us that opportunity. Obviously, we had a completely unexpected outcome from an extremely low-risk procedure in this case, and Dr. Fiskett and I again, would like to extend our sympathies to the owners for their loss. While the outcome for Rocky was tragic, he did not suddenly and unexpectedly arrest because of something Dr. Fiskett did or should have done. Rocky's physical exam findings and clinical presentation did not suggest any contraindications for a non-anesthetic dental cleaning. I hope you had a chance to review the demonstrative video that we submitted, which shows how these non-anesthetic cleanings are performed. The pet is basically cradled in the arms of the technician and the pet's teeth are gently cleaned. We recognize and appreciate that Rocky was an 11-year-old dog, but these types of non-anesthetic dental cleanings are routinely sought by clients with older dogs, even those with mild cardiac issues. And the reason for that is to avoid the greater risks associated with dental procedures under full anesthesia. Before you question Dr. Fiskett, I want to dispel the notion that she was grossly negligent because she went forward with this cleaning when Rocky presented in an excited state or with a medical history that precluded him from being a candidate for having his teeth cleaned. As the owner stated in his complaint, and I quote, Rocky was a healthy dog at 11 years old and had no past health problems and was under no medication of any type. You can see in the subsequent records from VetMed that you have, and that's where Rocky was taken after he arrested. The owner there told the doctor that Rocky had been quote-unquote doing well prior to the dental. Also, on presentation to Dr. Fisket, the owner initially left the health concern section of the client information form completely blank. He had no concerns. Then, when prompted by Dr. Fisket's assistant, Tracy, the owner wrote, quote-unquote, coughing when excited, heart murmur. Dr. Fisket appropriately performed a physical exam prior to the cleaning, and no heart murmur was detected. As set forth in the medical record, the physical exam findings were completely normal. If she had detected a heart murmur, Dr. Fisket would have noted that in the medical record and would have discussed it with the owner before proceeding with the cleaning. As I stated previously, a pre-existing heart condition, including a prior heart murmur, does not automatically rule out or disqualify every dog from a future dental cleaning. And that's true with regard to cleanings done under anesthesia or without anesthesia, as in this case. In reviewing the investigative committee's recommendation, you will see that the gross negligence proposal is for proceeding with a dental, for proceeding with a medical procedure, a non-anesthetic dental cleaning, on a quote-unquote excited dog. Procedures are performed on excited dogs all the time, but this dog, Rocky, was not excited the day that he presented to Dr. Fisket. How do we know that? Because the owner himself, on the check-in sheet, wrote that Rocky coughs when excited. Dr. Fisket did a complete physical exam before the cleaning, and Rocky was not coughing. Therefore, under the owner's own definition, the dog was not excited. It was therefore appropriate for Dr. Fisket and her staff to go forward with the dental cleaning. Again, this was not even an anesthetic or sedation procedure. No drugs whatsoever were administered. Dr. Fisket will tell you that when the practice performs these cleanings, the technicians are trained that if a dog appears stressed or uncomfortable, the cleaning is stopped and the dog is released back to the owner. There's no evidence whatsoever that Rocky was excited on presentation or that he became stressed or uncomfortable during the actual cleaning. There was nothing unusual about this dental cleaning up to the point where Rocky suddenly arrested. He was handled in the exact same manner as every one of the thousands of non-anesthetic dental cleaning patients are handled. Specifically, after the physical exam, Rocky was leash walked to the dental technician. The dental technician then introduced herself to the dog and he was surgically wrapped in a towel. Again, if a dog becomes stressed or significantly resists during the cleaning, the procedure is terminated and the dog is returned to the owner at no charge and a referral is made for an anesthetic cleaning. This didn't happen in this case because Rocky was completely fine during the procedure. He was not stressed. He was not resistant. In fact, the medical record specifically states, quote unquote, dog was not stressed or reactive during dental. The evidence is clear that Rocky was fine throughout the cleaning, and it wasn't until the very end of the cleaning that he suddenly and unexpectedly arrested. Unfortunately, we do not have a necropsy report, and without one, no one can say that Rocky passed away because of something Rocky did or should have, or something that Dr. Fisket did or should have done. Without that evidence, there can be no legally sustainable gross negligence violation in this case. Dr. Fisket is now available to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Would now like to ask the board members if they have any questions of Dr. Fisket.
I do. So I understand that your assessment initially with this dog was that he was not excited upon presentation, but the medical record shows a 220 heart rate. So I was wondering if you could kind of explain to me what you think a 220 heart rate means in a dog, if it's not stress or excitement.
Okay, well, when you say excited, okay, that's the dog trembling, that's the dog being afraid. And since this incident happened, I have listened to the heart rate on many dogs, and the heart rate changes very quickly. Unfortunately, I did not do that on Rocky at the time. In my head, I said, okay, the heart rate's a little high, but the dog looks great. The patient looks fine.
So what would you think would have been causing a 220 heart rate?
The fact that he went for a ride with his family, the fact that he was in a facility where there were 100 dogs barking and having a good time outside, the fact that we brought him back and he was sitting in my lap.
So if you don't, because maybe it's the adjective that we're using, but if you don't define that as excited, what do you define that as? Scared, nervous, stressed?
No, I don't define it as any of those things. I took a look at my records for all the dogs that I've done, and 10% of the dogs that I've examined for this procedure had a heart rate of 180 or above at the time I examined them. And none of those dogs ever had a problem with this procedure.
And in a dog that you detect has a 220 heart rate with a previous known heart murmur, do you do anything different?
The only thing I would have done different would have been decline the case if the dog did not look like he would tolerate this procedure. This procedure is relatively simple, and because the dog is not sedated, the dog doesn't have any drugs on board, how the dog reacts determines whether or not we proceed. And if the dog is compliant and comfortable with what we're doing, we do it. And if the dog says no, we do not. We stop and we return the dog to the owner. We tell them that we can't do the dog, either for behavioral issues or because it's outside the scope of the service that we offered. And we refer them back to their primary care veterinarian for an anesthetic day.
So in this case, would you have said a dog that is in this condition with a 220 heart rate and a known heart murmur, that this was still a good candidate for the procedure at your facility?
Yes, because most of these owners who have dogs with heart murmurs are afraid to have their dogs anesthetized, and they seek out our services because we do not use any drugs when we perform the service.
And what monitoring do you do during these?
I usually just watch the dog. I watch the dog breathe, and I watch the dog's color, and I watch the dog's behavior. And if the dog starts to struggle, if the dog won't settle into the procedure, then I just say, just let him go. We're going to give him back to the owner.
And do you keep emergency drugs and equipment on site in the event that something like this happens?
No.
Or
no, no, because this has never happened before. As the responsible veterinarian, all of the premises have been inspected by the board, and no one has ever said anything to me or to my technician about requiring this equipment. If they had asked for it, it would have been there.
And when this pet passed away, mm-hmm. What was the guidance given to the owner as far as what to do at this point? I'm assuming you don't have a cremation service, being that you don't have dogs.
No, this particular procedure was performed at Doggy District in Peoria, which is a boarding and training facility. When the dog passed away, I attempted CPR. And I could not get the dog to come back. The dog just stopped breathing and the heart stopped, and I could not restart the heart. The owners wanted to take the dog to a veterinary hospital, so we wrapped the dog in a towel and we gave the dog back to the owners, and they took it to a veterinary hospital for further care.
So when you say you do CPR, mm-hmm. with no drugs or equipment,
I basically
you're
did
just doing compressions.
I just doing compressions. I opened the mouth. I looked in the pharyngeal area. I looked directly down into the trachea. There was no fluid. There was no blood. There was nothing obstructing the dog's breathing. And then I just did chest compressions.
And was the color good at that time, or was it?
Yes.
Because in the medical record, it just says CPR started or CPR was performed. It doesn't actually indicate that there was any monitoring or any specifics around what you were actually doing. So I just want to make sure that it's clear that no equipment was used,
that
no drugs were used.
That is correct. I had no drugs. I do not carry drugs with me for this procedure.
Okay. And then with regards to
kind of informed consent of the owner. Do typically you inform them that you don't keep emergency drugs on hand and you don't keep anything on hand because of the low risk of this?
No. It's just never been an issue.
Right. Well, at your place, but it has been an issue at other places. So I'm just trying to get an idea of how well the owners would be informed of the risks, especially in a dog with a known heart murmur.
Well, Mr. Kalu made his appointment on our website, doggydentalaz.com, and there are pictures and videos of how this procedure is performed, which provides a fair amount of information to the client exactly what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And if Mr. Kalu had any questions at all he had to do was ask, and I would have gone out and had a detailed discussion with him.
One other question about the heart rate. I know you said you monitor the heart rate as the dog is under the procedure, or at least you monitor.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to confuse you. I do the TPR before the exam, and then I turn the dog over to the technician who does the dental cleaning. I don't monitor the heart rate. We have no monitoring equipment on the dog during the procedure at all.
So once you deem this dog healthy for the procedure and the exam, you don't physically recheck, like you didn't give the dog time and recheck it 20 minutes later to see if the heart rate had come down?
No.
Okay. I don't have any additional questions.
Dr. Fiskett, do you provide any other sort of services, veterinary services at these locations?
No. It's the only thing that we do.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question. Focusing back on the pre-procedure exam, you stated that he looked fine and acted fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to be, I was hearing, a major criteria for you, these potential procedure patients.
Well,
he looked fine, his car ride was fine, he was a happy dog, he got in your lap and all that. Right,
but I also perform physical examination.
Right, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
So, would you agree or not agree that the dogs with severe underlying conditions can look and act fine?
They can.
So, would I be correct in saying, based on this particular instance and this particular patient, even if you had heard the murmur, you would have approved this patient for the procedure?
Even if I had seen the dog's medical record from Dr. Benson, I would have approved the dogs for this procedure.
From the record, and if you had heard it,
that is correct.
You still would have proceeded.
Yeah, and I would have talked to the owner about it.
You would have talked to the owner. Okay. That's the only question I have.
I have a question. So, I know you said that obviously this was your first pet that has died during this procedure, but now that you have lost a pet, whether again, what was the cause, but you still don't have any emergency equipment available though?
Well,
or supplies or?
Okay, so I wanted to wait until the issue was addressed by the board to find out what recommendations they would have, because it's difficult to be compliant when you don't know what you're being compliant with.
Okay.
So if there are recommendations from the board, if the board decides that certain things should be on site, then we'll take care of it and we'll have them on site and available. And we've had multiple prior inspections and it was never an issue, it was never brought up. Except that my most recent inspection, which was last Saturday, when the inspector asked me if I had emergency equipment, and I told her that we did not.
But you are open to getting something in the future, you're saying? If that is
I will tell you that I am a very compliant veterinarian with board regulations, and if you had said we need to do this, we would have done it.
So if it was order, you would do it, but not necessarily just do you think it's good
if it was if it was required, I would be compliant. If I felt that it was necessary, I would have done it anyway, but I never expected anything like this to happen performing this procedure. This procedure is usually relegated to the cosmetic and the grooming groups. And since there's no drugs that are administered, there's no drug interaction that I can counter, I just didn't think that it would be necessary to actually perform CPR on a dog and have the dog die this way.
Okay. And how many, like roughly, how many pets would you say when you start doing this procedure and they're in your lap and then all of a sudden they, you know, they squirm to get out or they try and bite you? Is it, you know, just a small fraction of them, or do you pretty much all of them continue with the procedure?
Most of our clients have been to us before, okay? And when we get a new dog, Tracy spends a few minutes just introducing herself to the dog. She holds the dog, she pets the dog, she talks to the dog. And I have to admit, the first couple times I saw this done, I couldn't believe that the dogs were that compliant. And she doesn't force them, she doesn't tie them down. We don't force the dog. If the dog says no, the dog says no. You're not going to convince a Great Dane not to lay in your arms.
So is it mostly small dogs? Can you say you
hold them? No, we just did a Great Dane.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
I have a follow-up question, sure. Madam Chair, to what you were asking. What percentage of your clients do you call a stop because they're not being amenable to the procedure that you say, okay, I can't do this, I can't have staff do this?
Okay, so we book 10 clients a day.
Yeah.
Okay, we average about 7 to 8 dogs. Some of those dogs we decline because of behavioral issues with the dogs.
Roughly how many? What would you say the proportion is on any given day?
Probably one, a little bit less. I mean, on an average, about 0.75 or so.
Okay,
so those are dogs that we just did 125-pound Great Dane on Friday. And if that dog had said no, you're not going to do anything to that dog that it doesn't want you to do, especially when you're poking around in his mouth.
Right. Okay. I have a mm-hmm. question. So you had said if the past premise inspections mm-hmm. had told you you had to have emergency drugs, you would have them.
Yes, even if they had suggested that we should do it,
so
then I would have said, well, okay, fine, you know, we're not talking, you know, bazillion dollars. If the board required it or thought it was a good idea, we would have done it.
So you know as a veterinarian that you're responsible for knowing what's in the administrative rules?
Yes.
Okay. So R311 702, a responsible veterinarian shall ensure that the equipment and supplies are available on the veterinary medical premises of an adequate number and type to provide the medical services that are offered at the veterinary medical premises. So it's not on the board staff doing the premise inspection to comply and to have what's necessary, it's on the responsible veterinarian.
Okay, so, and I could understand if I were administering drugs or vaccines, because those are known risks that need to be reversed. In this particular situation, I'm not giving any dog any drug at all.
So are drugs reversing?
Pardon? No.
Only drugs need intervention?
No, I didn't say that. But what I'm saying is that would, if I were administering vaccines, then you could potentially have an anaphylactic reaction. And so you should have those drugs that would counter that. Okay, in this particular case, we're not administering any drugs, okay? And so this particular event, while it's terribly tragic and very, very unfortunate, was not foreseen.
So,
I mean,
cardiac arrest is something that we would foresee?
Well, not cardiac arrest, but some sort of cardiac event related to drugs administered to the animal.
Just to drugs, though?
Well, yes. I mean, okay, so when a dog goes to get groomed, is there a defibrillator and an emergency kit at the groomers?
Well, is it a veterinarian? Is it a medical doctor?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you put a noose around a dog's neck in a grooming facility.
But we're not talking about a grooming facility.
That is correct, but what I'm saying to you is the procedure that we did not involve anything other than holding the dog and scraping the teeth.
I think the procedures, like the comparison to a grooming salon, is pretty consistent as far as what you're doing. What I'm struggling with is how well is that communicated to the general public that this is a veterinarian performing this procedure, but oh, by the way, I don't have anything additional I can do for your pet, just like a groomer, right? If I go to the groomer, I know my groomer's not going to be able to provide CPR and oxygen and drugs. Like, I know that because they're a groomer. Mm-hmm. But if I were to take my pet to a veterinarian that's doing a nail trim or a dental cleaning or whatever, I would assume that they have the knowledge and the ability to do that. So that's what I'm, that's what I like this line of conversation, because it's helping me to kind of determine how well do you feel the public thinks you're a veterinary office versus a groomer.
I do believe that the people who come to us understand our service and they know the level of service that we're providing. And this kind of event is really a rarity.
So now that it happened, you still haven't made any efforts to intervene should it happen again?
As I said, I was waiting to discuss this at this meeting to find out what the board's thoughts are.
But what are your thoughts as the veterinarian that has patients that you're responsible for?
Well, my thoughts are that there's probably some equipment that we should purchase, and I can purchase a couple of drugs. I don't know, do you want me to carry an oxygen tank? That's the type of thing I'm looking for. I'm looking for some guidance as far as what you require or what you would want to have in place.
But as the veterinarian responsible for these lives, what do you feel is appropriate at this point?
Well, I would probably have some endotracheal tubes and an Ambu bag, and I'd probably have some Dopram and epinephrine, at least.
Okay. I don't have any other questions.
I have, Madam Chair. Do you administer any, or inject or orally or whatever, any medications that require a prescription?
For this particular thing?
For any cases that you treat.
Well, I have another job that is not involved in
okay.
this.
Okay, are any of these dental procedures?
Okay, so as far as the dental procedures go, I do not carry drugs with me, I do not prescribe any drugs, and I do not write prescription for drugs. If I feel the dog needs to have antibiotics for what we see in the mouth, I will refer them back to their primary care veterinarian for that care.
So you do not administer any
anything.
Drugs?
I don't give them anything.
Thank you.
Another question. In the website or the advertising mm-hmm. of this service, could you explain the description of the veterinarian and their responsibility in this as far as what the public perceives?
I think the website says veterinary supervised. And a physical examination is performed.
Okay. And so is the idea then that will alleviate concerns of the pet owner that they're not just going to a groomer?
I believe it's required by the state of Arizona that a veterinarian be present.
Because it's a medical procedure. Okay, no, that's all.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions for who responded? Okay, you can both step back. We do have the complainant here, Zade Callow. You'd like to come forward? Okay, I'd just like to, you're both gonna speak
yeah.
just like last time. Okay, I'm gonna swear you both in. let's see. Do you both swear to tell that the affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the whole truth, the whole and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. We obviously have read the materials that you have provided, and you may both now address the board.
State your name for the record.
Oh, sorry. State both of your names for the record.
Zade Kalu.
Okay.
Joseph Kalu.
Great. Thank you.
So, if you guys are aware of the whole tragedy, the sad story of Rocky. And just I have a couple points to for the respondent share about the statement. About the grooming, we took Rocky to the grooming multi times. He's 11 years old. We never had any problem or any concern.
from the groomer. We always take him to Pet Mart. And the Pet Mart on Scottsdale Road and Mayo. And we never had any problem with the grooming. I don't know how many times. Second thing, as a vet, professional vet, and a pro, she's supposed to know with 220 heart rates, his heartbeat. And we're tired. We asked so many vets, his vet, with some resources from online, my son, 120 to 150 maximum as a heartbeat for his age and his size. So why she didn't walk outside, just I don't understand why she didn't walk outside and just tell us as a pet owner, his heartbeat is 220. Would you like me to move on with the procedure or stop? I'd be happy to pay her the full amount. Why? We don't know. We're a pet owner, right? And about the emergency kit, and she stated, the respondent, she stated that she wants your authorization. There's no such a thing like this. I'm HVAC contractor. I don't go to the register of contractor and ask them, do I need to have a recovery machine? Do I need to have a vacuum pump? No. I passed the test. The state gave me my license, so I'm supposed to know. I have this equipment to do every single job. I don't ask the register every time, oh, I didn't have the equipment. I'm waiting for your response from the meeting. That's not acceptable. She's a professional. She's supposed to have all the equipment. And the third thing, it's your committee meeting. You know, there's like a discussion about the dangerous of do that kind of dental without anesthesia. We went to the website. Everything looks normal to us. I mean, we went through the review. That's as a consumer. I mean, that's all we can know. All we can do, read the review. As if you know, if you like, go to a doctor or do anything. First of all, as a consumer, read the review, the star rating, and all that stuff. So we went through the review. It looks normal to us. We don't know. I mean, on the committee meeting, you guys, one of the decision was this kind of procedure is more dangerous than putting the pet under anesthesia. If you review your notes, you know, one of the doctors said it's more dangerous than anesthesia. So it's supposed to have like something at least to save the pet life, you know, better than we go through all this suffering and, you know, the causing the death of Rocky and, you know, my whole family. It's like, so we're still suffering. It's been almost since September till now, almost like 7-8 months. And the last thing, she didn't even give us any advice or anything, you know, about what to do with Rocky. She just handled us on a blanket, and she said, okay, go to the nearest emergency down the street. It was Labor Day. It was like 3:30 in the afternoon. We don't know what to do. And we lived so far, so we don't know what to do. We took him to the emergency. It took us about 45 minutes, of course. He and the weather at that day, it was like 110 degrees. So we took him, they did the best they can. I mean, I think he was dead by the time. And the emergency, they kept him about like 24 hours. So they said, in the freezer, they said, you have to make your decision. And you know, we never had this experience. I mean, it's tough. So we decided to bury him in our backyard. We took him, we buried him in our backyard. And one more thing, please, before I pass to my son Joseph, her technician Tracy Johnson. When we were outside, they were in the room, closed the door. We don't know what's going on inside. Refused to give us the footage of the cameras. She said, "Oh, he stand. I'm sorry, poop, collapse. How come he stand when she stated, oh, he was full relaxed in the blanket, and you know, I don't get it. How he stand with from her lap." That's all I have, and thank you, and I'm very confident the board and the doctors will make the right and the fair judgment in this tragedy story. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Joseph.
You know, a couple things to add on. Thank you for letting me speak. I appreciate it. So you guys know his heartbeat was 220. And what kind of stands out to me is that who says it didn't go over 220 during the procedure? Because she said that she didn't check his heart rate during the procedure. And then, like my dad stated, what Tracy Johnson said was that he stood, pooped, and collapsed, which is kind of suspicious because when we saw him dead on the floor, his eyes were open and his tongue was out. So I'm not sure why, you know, like Dr. Fiskett said, if he's like cuddled in a blanket, why did he stand up? So, and then she also said that she did perform proper CPR, but I mean, according to the footage, she was just tapping his chest, you know, and we asked multiple vets, we even asked Doggy District how proper CPR is for dogs. They said chest compressions and blowing through the nose. We didn't really see that in the footage. So, and like everyone can agree, tapping on the chest is not proper CPR, it's genuine chest compressions. And like we were talking about, there's no equipment, you know, no oxygen tank, no proper drugs, IVs and all that. And you know, I just feel like you never know like what could go wrong. It only takes one time for a tragedy to happen. You can't just assume, oh, well, it's gonna be fine. Like it takes one time for something to happen, anything in life. And another thing is that I just felt that she was rude for our family, I mean to our family. And I remember my dad, so when like Rocky was laying on the floor, he's like, Rocky, maybe there's some hope. And I still remember, she's like, sir, he's gone. Which means that there's like no hope, no compassion towards us. And we took him to the nearest hospital, but it was Labor Day, so it was closed. So we had to drive like 30, 45 minutes to the next hospital, which honestly, by that time, he's dead, you know, because when, you know, cardiac arrest happens, every second matters. And, you know, we just buried him in our backyard. You know, we didn't really know like what to do. You know, I mean, I've never really heard of cremation before all this and all that. So I just feel like, you know, if the proper CPR was given, you look at like back in January in the NFL, when you got that player, DeMar Hamlin, you know, he collapsed on the field. They gave him proper CPR, the reports came out, and he's alive today. So it makes me think, let's put him in Rocky's position. Because, you know, dogs and humans are both mammals, right? So put DeMar in Rocky's position, he'd probably be dead now. So you would think that maybe if he was given proper CPR, you know, treated with more care, with more, you know, just give him like more care, more caution, being more cautious with him, he might be alive today. And really, we can't really get Rocky back anymore. I mean, he's gone. So with the heart rate, I mean, like my dad said, we asked multiple vets, 120 to 150, maybe 160. And, you know, like I said earlier, who says that 220 didn't go up? You know, like, we don't know, because she didn't test his heart rate during the procedure. And for the heart murmur, our, you know, current vet that Rocky sees, he never referred him to a cardiologist. He never deemed it to be, you know, threatening to his health or anything. He just said, you know, be cautious, watch it, and all that. And, you know, I just feel like there was no like proper communication between Tracy Johnson and Dr. Fiskett. And it just, I feel like all that kind of caused this whole situation, you know. And it's hard, you know, I mean, for me, my family, you know, I had surgery back in July, this happened in September. So I was still like recovering, you know, physical therapy and all that, you know, like it's hard to like, get back to everything. And just one more thing that like really stood out to me was Doggy Dental does have an Instagram page where, you know, they post dogs and, you know, like trying to promote their business and all that. And what really stood out was that on that same day, so this happened at like Rocky passed at 3:15, 3:30. I remember going back at night at like 7 or 8 o'clock, and I go on their Instagram page, and they posted a picture on that same day Rocky passed away. So basically, they're promoting their business after they had a dog pass away, which, I mean, it just kind of like raises questions to me. How do you really have a heart to promote your business when you had a tragedy occur during that same day? So, I mean, that's all I have to say. Again, I appreciate it for letting me speak.
Do any of the board members have any questions of the complainants?
I have just one question. In looking, when you were deciding where to take Rocky, was it clear to you that this was a veterinary hospital or clinic or location that didn't actually have full service? Or were you thinking that this would be more like going to a hospital where they have all of the equipment and procedures that are done every day, like in a normal hospital?
Well, as a consumer, you know, we go through the review for Doggy Dental, which is owned by the Dr. Fiskett, and I don't know what's the position of Tracy Johnson as a consumer. You know, Doggy Dental, we didn't even look at them. We didn't even consider them. But we focus on the, you know, we were confident to give Rocky to a professional vet. That's why we did that procedure. We don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't have any additional
questions. Question. We have some records here that in July of 20, Rocky had a dental at his regular vet under anesthesia, a regular dental.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I have that.
And was that when the murmur was discovered the first time? Or had it been pointed out to you before that?
No, we usually take Rocky to Dr. Benson since we got him. He was like three months.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he recommend, you know, we take him for, of course, his shots. Right. He's a license. We license him from mm-hmm. the city of Phoenix. And, you know, annual exam.
Don't mean to interrupt, but I guess yeah. I'm really interested in when this murmur was first discovered. Was it at this visit, or did you know about it even before this one?
As far as I know, maybe after okay. this visit, Dr. Benson, you know, just we asked him about non-anesthesia. He said, yeah, you know, and you know his age. Yeah, so it's not matter if you find a good place, go for it. But
you ask his advice about going for a non-anesthetic.
Yeah, but in the meantime, he said, yeah, if you do anesthesia, should be, you know, we trust Dr. Benson, but, you know, for a quick, result, we found this place.
Understood.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And that was in July of 20 that dental was done. And
yes.
We know for sure we have documentation of the murmur at that point. That's all I'm asking.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's the only question.
Thank you both. You may now go ahead and step back.